Can you hear us in the back?
You guys hear us back there? So moving forward, we're going to start each session with 2 minutes, 2 minutes of silent meditation. And then I'm going to lead us in a prayer, and I'm going to divide the prayer up so when I pause is when you guys repeat after me, okay? God, we acknowledge your presence here. Please guide us and direct us. Please set aside. Everything we think. We know about the first step. Please set aside. Everything we think we know. About alcoholism. Addiction. The 12 steps. The big book. Ourselves. And especially you, God. Help us see the truth. Amen. My name's Tarek. I'm an addict. I'm going to read something. This is called Opportunity. A green bird darting in the night, will you be able to see it? Will you be able to catch it? Cling to spirit like a shadow. Move without a shadow. Times of oppression and adversity like addiction and alcoholism cannot last forever. How is the transition made to new and better situations? In the midst of great difficulty, a tiny opportunity will open, if only by chance. You must be sharp enough to discern it, quick enough to catch it, and determined enough to do something with it. If you let it pass, you'll be filled with regrets. Stick to spirit like a shadow. Wherever it goes, you go. As soon as it throws something your way, catch it by sheer reflex. It is like the bird. If you try to catch it, you will miss. But if you're always with it, moving at its speed, as much a part of it as its own shadow, then it is easy to seize it. When you act, however, you in turn must have no shadow. In other words, what you must do must leave no messiness, no leftover consequences, nothing that will haunt you later. That is one of the ways in which you avoid creating more bad situations for yourself. I mean, I'm so grateful that the mentality I had on the street followed me into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous. I wanted the best drugs when I was out on the street. I wanted the stiffest drinks. I wanted to hang out with people that were in the know and they knew where to go and they knew all the right people. And they had the best of what that life had to offer. And that mentality followed me into the rooms. It fascinates me because I've spent the better part of 11 years watching individuals where that is not the case. So, if you go to AA meetings or CA meetings and you take, let's say you take 100 people. You take them out of the rooms and you put them back in the bar or back on the party scene. So, what you're going to find if you watch is a third of that group will walk into a bar, they'll belly up to the bar, and they will drink just until it feels good, and they go home. Then you have this other third that's going to go to the bar, they're going to sit at the bar, they're going to wallow in their beer, and they're going to cry in their whiskey, and they're going to tell you this is all there is of alcohol. That's all it's going to do for me. This is it. And then you got this other third. My people. We go to the bar. We burn the bar to the ground. We find the after party and we burn that to the ground. Then we find the crack house or some rooming house that you pay by the hour in. And we hang out until the sun comes up. And then we do it over and over and over. We're mad dogs. All right. You take those 100 people out of that situation, you put them back in the rooms, and for whatever reason, this must be part of the universe because it occurs and it happens, so it must be necessary. But what you see is they work the steps the same way. You'll see a third of them will come to our meetings because they need a meeting, because they need to feel good, and they go home. Then you get another third that goes to the meetings, and they wallow in their big book, and they cry in our meetings, and they use it as group therapy, and they use it as a spiritual filling station, and they suck all they can get out of it, and they go home. Then you have this other third, which we call the mad dogs, which they're going to be spearheads for God's ever-advancing creation, and the meetings are pep rallies for God, and they go in there, and they carry a message of depth and weight, and they don't care what other people think. That's what we do. God is what we have to offer. I've always just been interested because I've seen individuals that will go outside of the scope of what I just described. I'll see some people that were mad dogs. At least when they tell their war story, they sound like a mad dog. But then they get into the rooms and they turn into this little ankle biter dog. I don't get it. They do not attack recovery like they attack the drugs and alcohol. It's the most baffling thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I do not understand it, nor do I comprehend it, but it's there. Maybe it's only there as a lesson, as a reminder. So ask yourself, are you going after this like you went after that? And then ask yourself, is what you're doing sustainable? Because that's the key, sustainability. I watch a lot of people, they come out of the gates really strong and they run out of gas. It's got to be sustainable. And it can be exciting and sustainable at the same time. So you might be asking yourself, well, what do I have to do? You know, it sounds like I think like Tarek. It sounds like I got high like Tarek, or maybe I drank like Tarek. And there's a part of me that believes this program can work for me too. So what the hell am I supposed to do at this point? If you turn to your title page in the big book, it's the page after the page that just says Alcoholics Anonymous. There used to be a circle and a triangle in the book. That symbol has now become synonymous with Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's no longer part of AA. We lost that privilege in 19... Well, not a privilege, but we lost our ability to use it as a marketing tool in 1994 and 1995, somewhere in there. It's an ancient spiritual symbol. So if you Google circle and triangle, you'll see a lot of cool stuff about the background. And one of the definitions or the ideas they throw around from ancient cultures in the East and traditions is the idea that your mind, body, and spirit can be whole. They can be at one. All right, it's a holistic approach to things. So what is our holistic approach? Well, we have our circle and triangle. And in 1955, Bill Wilson delivered three legacies to Alcoholics Anonymous: recovery, unity, and service. The idea is, if we can become active in all three of those areas, we will recover physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally. So the question is, what are you willing to do? That's an important question you have to ask for yourself. Because in order to be active in all three areas of the circle and triangle, you have to be convinced that it's valuable. Because we don't do anything. We don't do jack shit unless we think it's valuable, period. So sometimes the value is created by watching other people. Sometimes the value is created when you go through part of the process, you get some results, but you don't continue with the process. I don't know what's going to create value for you. It could be a surrender experience that pummels you, that destroys you and reduces you to absolutely nothing. And your ego is completely smashed and deflated, and you're just very teachable, and then you run into a guy, and then he teaches you what you need to be taught, and you recover. It's different for everybody. But I do believe that this is a roadmap. That's why they gave us three legacies. Okay? So it's interesting. Over the years, I've developed a theory of some things that lead to relapse. Relapse has an evolution, people. It just doesn't show up. And so some of the things that I've noticed over the years that lead to relapse, one of which is a sense of separation or isolation. You walk into a meeting and you just do not connect. You're on your own island, but you got all the nice clothes on and you're dressed to kill and you got the cologne and the ladies have the perfume and it's like Friday night at a bar and someone says, "How you doing?" And you say, "I'm doing great." And inside you're not. And that has to do with that sense of separation. For whatever reason, we haven't experienced unity. The body. So mind, body, spirit. Let's think of that. The unity correlates to the body. Why is the fellowship so important? Why is the home group so important? Why is it important that you get a group of men and women around you that care about you, that tell you the truth, regardless of how it's going to affect you? They just tell you the truth because the truth will save your life. You go to group conscience on a regular basis. You go to the meeting before the meeting after the meeting. You do all these things to experience unity. Because the deeper the unity, it increases your chance of staying if you feel the unity. And the unity happens with fellowship and relationships. And for us, Brandon and I, a lot of the relationship building has occurred around transparent dialogue about how we show up in life, our character in life, right? Not only just tattletaling on ourselves about what we just did, like how is it affecting us? What do we notice about ourselves as we're engaging in these conversations? Are we going through a process of self-examination, and are we going through a process of self-reckoning where we're recognizing things about ourselves and we are attempting to go into a course of action to change? To deepen our experience with God, which could create a change. That's unity. If you have unity in your life, if I'm a betting man, I bet on this every time, you're going to experience a sense of belonging and not a sense of separation. That's the unity piece. Now, the recovery piece, the first, in my estimation, the first 11 steps, you go through those steps, and your sanity is restored. As far as the big book goes, it's restored on page 85. Your will was turned over to God on page 63 in the third step, and then you can use your will along certain lines on the 10th step on page 85. Well, that's 22 pages. A lot of action in those 22 pages. As you work those steps, you'll begin to have more proportion in your life, and you will begin to think straighter than you were thinking when you got here. Now, that's a constant evolution and change that happens. But our perspectives about people and the world begin to change. We're no longer the assigners of blame. Our amount of judgment diminishes, and we're able to relax a lot of rigid ideas that we brought to the table, and we were willing to investigate with some curiosity. And maybe we move forward with the ideas we came with, or maybe we start with some new ideas that just seem to work better. So that's recovery. The mind goes into the recovery process. The body goes into the fellowship and finds the unity. Because one of the first layers of healing that happens for us, for me, was when I sat in a meeting and I heard someone tell part of my story, I no longer thought I was the only one that went through that. That was really important for me. A degree of healing took place when I started to relate and identify. That's one of the reasons the meetings are so important. Fellowship is important. I used to say that it was not as important as the steps. I don't believe that anymore. No one side of this triangle is more or less important than the other. So you got recovery at the foundation. You have the unity. Recovery addresses the mind. The unity addresses the body. So this insanity that we have, the inability to have proportion and our inability to think straight, it gets addressed if we work these 12 steps. And then there's the service piece, right? So service has all kinds of things attached to it. I used to say service work, like me being a treasurer in my home group. That was really service to keep the fellowship unified, to keep our group unified. I still believe that is true, but I would put it under this umbrella of it is service work. There are different degrees of service work, though. So I'm sponsoring 6 people through the steps right now, and I've got, 12 or 14 guys other than that refer to me. They will use the name sponsor with me. I sacrifice a great deal of my personal time to take those people through the steps. Now, I'm single right now. Well, I have a girlfriend that lives in Toronto. So, I'm not single. If she hears this recording, I am not single. But I'm only with her 1 week out of the month. And so the rest of the time, I can divide my time out to my 6 sponsees because it's like I'm single, but I'm not. We video call every day. But when I am here the 3 weeks and I'm not with her, I am meeting with sponsees at least four nights a week. What do I call that? I call that self-sacrifice because sometimes I am not in the mood to meet with those sponsees. I don't want to. I want to sit on the couch and read a book. I just got a record player. I want to listen to a record and sit and chill and read a book. You know, maybe I just want to watch some Netflix tonight or some Amazon Prime. But no. That gets put aside because I have a responsibility to carry this message, and I'm still doing it. Maybe one day I won't, I don't know. But today I find myself carrying this message. And that's how I feed my spirit. I get a sense of purpose out of that because there's a place that I think is very dangerous for any alcoholic or addict, and it's when you get to a place where you feel useless. Part of this process, that's why the 12 steps there, it helps us become useful. So now, no matter how dark your past is, you can convert it from an asset, from a liability to an asset, and you can help avert death for someone else. That's why the steps are designed the way they are. So we can get out of ourselves and help others wake up. Help them have their own experience with a power greater than themselves. So that's how we can use this circle and triangle as a roadmap. Are you active? If you're a chronic relapser or you were sober for a while and you relapsed, ask yourself, what was I doing in these areas? And all of these have to be done, in my opinion, with a degree of rigorous honesty. I've watched people do this stuff and not live an live a life of rigorous dishonesty. And they don't make it. So take that for what it's worth. This is one of the most beneficial pieces of information that I've put into practical application in my time here. So it addresses all 3 areas that we need to have addressed. Mentally, physically and spiritually. So, with that being said, on that title page is the word recovered. The story of how many thousands, they exaggerate, right? The book was written, there's only 100 of them, but the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. So, we recover from the mental and the physical aspects of alcoholism, which is the fact that when I drink or use drugs, most drugs, all bets are off. I don't know. I can't tell you how much I'm going to do. I can't tell you how much I'm going to spend. I can't tell you how long it's going to last. I can't tell you where it's going to end up taking me. That's no control. And once I stop, and I always stopped, I always started back up again, even though near the last 4 years, I always didn't want to start up again. That is physical and mental powerlessness. Now, in terms of the big book, on page 44, and we acknowledge it, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, mental. Or when drinking and or using, you have little control over the amount, physical. You're probably an addict or an alcoholic. Simple test, right? We have two questions. Why NA has 100, I'll never know. But we have two. Right? It's simple in the big book. Simple, simple, simple. Those are the two things. That is alcoholism, that is addiction. Now, we have a three-part problem. But the third part of our problem, the spiritual, is not part of alcoholism and addiction. Because there are so many people that I know that do not struggle with alcohol and drugs that have the spiritual malady. So it cannot be part of addiction and alcoholism, but it is part of our problem. It is part of our problem. I don't know if I believe in untreated alcoholism anymore or untreated addiction. Because there's no alcohol in the picture. There's no drugs in the picture. Right? Now you're suffering from a human condition which the majority of the planet suffers from. Problems in personal relationship. Constant judgment. Can't control my emotional natures. Prey to misery and depression, struggling with fear and unhappiness and fear, not being able to help others, not being able to make a living. These problems are not reserved for alcoholics and addicts. Right? But what happens is we're the select group here that suffered from that and found a solution in drugs and alcohol. Right? When everybody else found out that I was smoking pot and drinking, and they said to themselves, oh, no, 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 you've discovered a problem. This has got to stop. And me, to myself, no, 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 I've discovered the answer I've been looking for. Right? I've discovered something amazing. Something that did for me what I couldn't do for myself. So I've recovered from the mental and the physical aspects of alcoholism and addiction. I'm always going to be recovering from this spiritual problem. I'll always be in a spiritual battle. There's always going to be spiritual warfare going on in my life. It's just there. The lower natured instincts in me, those lower natured desires, they're always going to be in play at some level. They're always going to be moving through me. I'm responsible for all of it. But it is not part of addiction and alcoholism the way I see it today. But it has to be addressed. That's what these 12 steps will do. They will address that problem. That's why the 12 steps, the codes, the values, the tenets that we're taught in these 12 steps, they can help anyone. Think about all the anonymous programs are out there. To some degree, they see that. They see the benefit in those 12 steps. So when people in meetings introduce themselves as recovering, I think I understand what they really mean by that. I don't think a lot of them think they're always going to be sick, but they're always going to be needing growth and movement and evolution. If only they would say that, I wouldn't have so much resistance to when they say it. Because the newcomer gets confused. Wait, am I going to get well? Am I going to always be sick? What's going on here? You're going to get well. You're going to get well to the degree that you don't need to put a substance in your body to address the human condition. That's what we're talking about here. So, the book's like a set of instructions, a swing set. You guys built, everyone in here has built something before, and it's got all the different parts. It's got It's got part A, part B, part C, part D. Put it all together, you get a swing set, or you get a desk, or you get something. This book's no different. This book is a recipe. But you have to follow the directions, or you're going to get something that doesn't taste good. That's the way I look at it. I'm trying to use as many analogies as possible so I can perhaps get you to, like, where the Rubik's Cube, all the sizes are the same color, like, oh, I get it now. Somewhere in there, it's going to happen where it just starts to make, something that doesn't make sense starts to make sense. Because the steps are counterintuitive. All right, you see them on the wall. You literally, I remember those first 3 years of going to meetings. I sat in my chair and I would go through the steps and I would sort of address them as I was sitting in a meeting. I had no idea this blue book over here actually had some instructions in it. Okay? So, the last thing I want to touch on before I turn it over to Brandon is, in the forewords, it's going to talk about our way of life has its advantages to all. The universe is a better place that we're all sitting in here tonight, clean and sober. All right, a lot of people benefit from that. But it also goes in line with what I was saying earlier, that our way of life has its advantages for all. Notice, it doesn't say our way of not drinking, our way of not using. It's a way of life. This goes back to what I said in the first session, that you have to come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as you're living it, so you're convinced you need a new way of life. But if you still think the drugs and the alcohol are the problem, you're never going to be convinced that you need a new way of life. Question to ask yourself. Do you believe the drugs and alcohol are the problem, or is it the way of life that you're living? And I'm not talking about external stuff. I'm talking about internal and the way that you operate in relationship to other people. Because if the way you operate in relationship to other people is sideways, and you believe that resentments can shut you off from the sunlight of the Spirit, where do you think resentments come from? Resentments come from our interactions with other people. So if our interactions with other people are not whole, to the best of our ability, and we're sideways with a bunch of people in the way we live our life, we're going to be shut off from the sunlight of the Spirit that we receive from human connection. Does it make sense? Do you believe you need a new way of life?
An alcoholic, my name's Brandon. You guys would turn to page 562 in the back of the book. Play a little game with you about word semantics that I'll probably spend most of what I'm talking about on. So just for fun, on 562, you guys see the short form of the third tradition there? Kind of short, two lines. We've also got it on the wall up here if you have really good eyes. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. See it? Short and easy, to the point. Now, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but the traditions were delivered to the fellowship in the long form. Bill had a longer explanation of what he intended of each one of the traditions, and so he delivered that in the grapevine once a month over the course of a year. And if you look over on the page 563, there's a long form of the third tradition that I'll read now. Okay, so remember, over here on the short form, it just says the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Just got one stop. That's it. Now, the long form says our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. That's different, isn't it? I can go to a meeting if I don't want to drink, but I don't have to be an alcoholic in the short form. In order to be a member in the long form, I actually have to suffer from alcoholism. Okay? Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. Another requirement. I actually have to want to get well. In the first session, I introduced myself as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm also a member of Cocaine Anonymous. I have alcoholism, and I want to get well. Therefore, I can be a member. If I don't have those two things, you're not a member, according to the long form. Nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation. So if I'm a group of dentists that say I have an AA meeting, it's not an AA meeting, because I can't be a group of dentists having an AA meeting. An AA meeting has no affiliation. By the long form of the third tradition, men-only, women-only meetings are actually a violation of this tradition, because that's another requirement, right? Now, I understand why they're there, and it's very important, especially the women-only meeting, because I don't know if you guys know this or not, but most men in early recovery are kind of creepy. So I appreciate the fact that they have those meetings. I have a men's big book study on Wednesday night that I attend, and we have women show up to that meeting all the time, and we ask them to stay. Because it's about getting well. Now, we let them know this is a predominantly men's meeting. You are welcome to stay. The church now actually has a women's meeting in the other building, and we offer them to go to that. Since that women's meeting showed up, none of them have stayed. They've always gone to the other meeting. Okay, but so isn't it interesting that there's a little bit of a difference between the short form and the long form, right? Did you guys know that there's a short form of the steps? And there's a long form of the steps? The short form you'll see up here on the wall, and it's contained, 11 of those steps are on page 59 of your big book. The 12 steps on page 60. Those are the short form of the steps. Those are the steps that the other fellowships other than CA adopt. The short form. Now, here's what's interesting. We go back to the table of contents. If we look at the way that it's broken down, the preface through the forward to the fourth edition, that's just general information. It's telling you about the fellowship and how it grew, how it changed, where they moved the stories from and to in the book, all sorts of interesting information, not recovery though. Okay. Starting in the doctor's opinion, if you're in the fourth edition, XXV, all the way to the end of chapter 3, more about alcoholism. So that's 43 pages in the first three chapters, plus 7 from doctor's opinion. It's 50. There's really the first two pages of We Agnostics and something on page 52. But roughly speaking, the first step in our book is contained within 50 pages. So now do you understand how a person like me gets confused when a person says that they showed up at the Bridges of Hope and they've already worked the first step? Well, why the hell does the book use 50 pages to explain it to me? See, I don't know about you, but I'm a guy that constantly needs to be convinced that I've got this thing. I need to understand it. Sponsorship's great because I can sit across from a guy that has the same experience as me and it beats it into me. The reconstruction of the ego in my head when it starts telling me that maybe you blew all that stuff out of proportion 70 years ago. I sit across from a guy that has the exact same experience as me, and it reinforces it. And his first step, me sitting down with him in the 12th step, makes me work my first step again. Okay, I'll go through some construction here again. We Agnostics, chapter 4, second step. Whole chapter, just the one step. How it works is steps 3 and 4. Into action, they've got steps 5 through 11 packed into that one chapter. Okay? And then what's interesting is, if you read the long form of the, or the short form of the 12th step, it says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, part A, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics or addicts, part B, and to practice these principles in all affairs, part C. So, working with others, anybody have any idea what that would be? That would be part B, right? Because part A is 1 through 11. Part B, K carrying the message to other alcoholics. And what do you think two wives, the family afterward, two employers, and a vision for you must be then?
Part C.
Part C, practicing these principles in all our affairs. So that's like 70-some-odd pages devoted to the 12th step. So what that tells me is that if the first step's important enough that they use 50 pages of the recovery portion of this book to explain it, and they use 70-some pages to explain the 12th step, those steps are probably pretty important, don't you think? And how many times do people come in, they gloss over the first step, I got it, and then when they get to 12, they're like, oh yeah, that's just, you know, making coffee and doing stuff like that. So much more to this, guys. So much more to this, okay? I want you to look at the forward to the first edition. I'm just going to cover a tiny bit of this. I could spend hours taking you through just this forward because there's so much information in here and so few words, okay? This is the forward as it appeared in the first printing in the first edition, 1939. We of Alcoholics Anonymous, all right, so that's already important to me. We, okay? A lot of people will refer to this book as being written by Bill Wilson. If you understand the history of how he wrote the book, he would write some, he would send it out to the fellowship. All the people in the world that were sober at that time, they would cross through it, edit it, send it back. He would incorporate their comments, rewrite. Okay, so we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women. Okay, so I'm not just arguing with Bill, I'm arguing with the collective consciousness of sobriety on the planet at the time. Have recovered, there's that word again, from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Okay? Now, it's interesting. When you sponsor a doctor, you start to ask questions and confirm things that you used to wonder. Did you know that when a person has cancer and they're in remission for 5 years, you know what they say the person is at that point in time? Cured of cancer. After 5 years of no flare-ups of cancer, they're cured. We're just saying we're recovered here. Although if you go into Dr. Bob's story and you go into Alcoholic Number 3's story, they talk about a cure. Interesting. Question everything. Question everything. To show other alcoholics and addicts kind of, just sort of, how we recovered is the main purpose of going to the meetings every day. Does your book say that?
No.
That's not what mine says. Mine says to show other alcoholics precisely. Just for fun, we've got a 1939 dictionary at my Monday night home group, CA group, carry this message, looked up precisely. What, just see if what it meant in 1939 was different than what it means now. I don't have it written in this book, but it was something like exactly conforming to in rule or usage. So precisely, right? So 1939, the word precisely meant what it means now. To show other alcoholics precisely, not kind of, like exactly, how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. Okay, so that's different. Because I go to meetings all the time and I don't hear anybody say that the book is where the message, where the program, where the steps are contained. Do you guys hear that in many meetings? Because I don't. But yet, this is what they said. Now, any of you guys that have been in treatment before or have been in sober living before, when you leave there, where do they tell you that you should go? AA, CA, NA, something like that, right? So, with all the scientific evidence and knowledge and advancement that we've had since this book was written over 80 years ago, the best thing mankind has to offer is AA, CA, NA. At least AA and CA. The basis of that program is this book. Does the book have different importance to you now? It does to me once I learn this. Okay. For them, people that are struggling with alcoholism and addiction, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. So they believe that they've given you a step-by-step instruction. Anybody ever buy anything from IKEA? If you actually, like, I'm a pretty handy guy, and I like to think I know stuff, and so sometimes, like, I'll buy something from IKEA, and I'll try to put it together. There's always that vital, like, little step that if you miss it, it turns left instead of right, and you can't quite figure out, so you have to go take it all apart and go back to the beginning. Well, this book contains that, okay? So then the question comes, okay, if this is where the answer is, do I have this thing? And to what degree? Maybe you have a mild case. Have you guys ever wondered? Who in here has a mild case of alcoholism and drug addiction? Who in here has an extremely severe case? Are you sure? Or do you just think? Because I've got a little external gauge, just for fun, we'll go through it twice to see where you're at. Because this is important to know. It's important for me to know, because I know then I know that I might go to meetings with some people that have a less severe case, and I can watch their actions and realize that maybe I don't have to. If I've got a severe case and they have a less severe case and they're not doing some of this stuff, and I have that identification, I might know that I have to do more than that person does. Okay? So, turn to page 108. This is one of those chapters that nobody reads because they think it's not important, right? Because the chapter's titled Two Wives. Who in this room is a wife? Okay?
Has a wife?
No, is a wife. I was interested to see how many people had their hair done. Because I only have knowledge of one wife in this room. Now, I realize there's some other tendencies, and that's okay. But, and I'm not making judgment on that, I'm just saying. Okay, so bottom of page 108. I want you to look at your own experience, okay? Own experience as it relates to alcohol only, okay? Your experience with alcohol. Do I need to say it again, or are we clear? Just alcohol. Don't look at drugs, just alcohol. Okay, one, your husband may be only a heavy drinker. His drinking may be constant or may be heavy only on certain occasions. Perhaps he spends too much money on liquor and may be slowing him up mentally and physically, but he does not see it. Sometimes he is a source of embarrassment to you and his friends. He is positive he can handle his liquor, that it does him no harm, that drinking is necessary in his business. He would probably be insulted if he were called an alcoholic. This world is full of people like him. Some will moderate or stop altogether, and some will not. Of those who keep on, a good number will become true alcoholics after a while. Is that you, or has that ever been you as it relates to alcohol? Raise your hand. Okay. Don't have to yell it out, but a good question to ask yourself is when. For me, I'll tell you, this was when I was kind of like, you know, college age, right? Okay. Two, as it relates to alcohol, your husband is showing lack of control, for he is unable to stay on the water wagon even when he wants to. He often gets entirely out of hand when drinking. He admits this is true, but is positive that he will do better. He has begun to try, with or without your cooperation, various means of moderating or staying dry. Maybe he's beginning to lose his friends. His business may suffer somewhat. He is worried at times and is becoming aware that he cannot drink like other people. He sometimes drinks in the morning and through the day also to hold his nervousness in check. He is remorseful after serious drinking bouts and tells you he wants to stop. But when he gets over the spree, he begins to think once more that he can drink moderately next time. We think this person is in danger. These are the earmarks of a real alcoholic. Perhaps he can still tend to business fairly well. He has by no means ruined everything. As we say among ourselves, he wants to stop. Is that you, or has that ever been you as it relates to alcohol? Okay, for me, this is kind of post-college, starting to get into my 20s, okay? All right. Three, this husband has gone further than husband number two. Though once like number two, he became worse. His friends have slipped away. His home is a near wreck. He cannot hold a position. Maybe the doctor has been called in the weary rounds of sanitariums and hospitals has begun. He admits he cannot drink like other people, but does not see why. He clings to the notion that he will yet find a way to do so. He may have come to the point where he desperately wants to stop, but cannot. His case presents additional questions, which we shall try to answer for you. You can be quite hopeful of a situation like this. Is that you, or has that ever been you, as it relates to alcohol? This was me. This is kind of where I didn't start going. Anybody in here ever been to a sanitarium? Okay. So, you know, back when this book was written, there were only three places in the world that would take drug and alcohol patients. Okay. Three that actually people went there to get treatment. Towns Hospital in New York. I'll try to figure out where the other ones are eventually. I keep saying I'll figure that out, but I haven't. So there were three in the world. You know where they sent all the other alcoholics and drug addicts? Sanitariums. You know what they call them today? Treatment centers. Okay? You know why they sent them to sanitariums? Because they couldn't figure out why these people kept doing the same things over and over and over and over again. They must be crazy. Anybody been to treatment more than once? You have been to sanitariums. Hate to insult you. The verbiage has changed, but it's the same. Okay. Four, your husband, you may have a husband for whom you completely despair. He has been placed in one institution after another. He is violent or appears definitely insane when drunk. Sometimes he drinks on the way home from the hospital. Perhaps he has had delirium tremens. Doctors may shake their heads and advise you to have him committed. Maybe you have already been obliged to put him away. This picture may not be as dark as it looks. Many of our husbands were just as far gone, yet they got well. Is that you, or has that ever been you around alcohol? Okay. I qualify as a type 3 alcoholic. Okay. I did not get to type 4. Should I have gone to hospitals and sanitariums? You betcha. I'm convinced that I had alcohol poisoning many a times. I just never got put anywhere to treat that. Okay? So this describes a lot of the external of what's going on. Now, this is just an external gauge. Okay? If you were to look at my insides, what was really going on me, I was like a 5, 6, 7, something like that. Like, I was off the charts, right? But we only have these four ways, okay? So, I'm going to skim them down in the interest of time. Now, if we're just looking at drugs, okay? Who only had drug use that was heavy on certain occasions and spent too much money on it, was slowing up mentally and physically, and was an embarrassment to their friends? Anybody qualify for that with drugs? Okay? How about showing lack of control, type 2? Unable to stay clean even when they want to. Gets entirely out of hand when using. Admits this is true, but is positive they will do better. Tried various means of changing drugs or moderating. Losing friends, business is suffering. Sometimes uses in the morning or all through the night. Anybody? Okay. Looking at drugs again, 3. Gone much further than number 2. Once, like 2, friends have slipped away. Home is a near wreck. Can't hold a position. Doctor's been called in. Hospitals. Overdoses. They cling to the notion that they'll manage somehow, some way. Anybody? Type 3? Okay, good. And then 4. This is who the people that everybody's given up on. They've been placed in one institution or another. They're violent or go on runs for days. Sometimes they're on the way home. They're thinking about where they hid that stuff in the tank of the toilet, their golf bag, or wherever it is. They've been committed multiple times. Their families are completely, completely given up on them. Who I got here? Okay. Good news for us. Okay. There's a lot of type 3 and type 4s in here. There's a line. I've observed this in the room. There's a line between type 2 and type 3. Okay, Now, those people that are meeting makers make it and go to meetings like crazy, and they use it as a spiritual refilling station. They share their problems and they leave the meeting. They never work a step and they seem to manage their life okay. Might be a type one. Okay? Somebody that maybe works the first four steps, does the fifth step, makes a couple amends to their family, and then, you know, just does the next right thing for the rest of their life. Maybe a type two. But if you've tried everything and it's not working, and you go through this again and again and again and again, and you keep ending up in the same place, you're a type 3 or type 4. And the good news is that the type 3 and type 4s, we have a solution that works 100% of the time. But you have to do it for the rest of your life. Okay? And what's confusing to a lot of people is they see those type 1 and type 2s in meetings. They're a type 3 or type 4, and they think they can do type 1 and type 2 work and maintain sobriety. And then they don't, and here's the darndest thing, is that after a while, they start to say that the steps don't work. But they never work the steps. Okay, here's where I'll let you know when I'm going to punch you square in the face a couple times. This is one of them. If you have had some time and you relapsed, is it possible that you never got well? And that even if you had a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, you never recovered. You just got to a state of remission. I can't tell you how many times I sit across from a guy that had 5 or 10 years. And we start dissecting what happened. And he wants to refer back to the 10 years he had before. And I hate to tell him, because I love people and I want them to do well, but it's like, that was corrupted. It didn't work. If you've had time and it's gone, you were missing something that you never got to a recovered state. I don't want to hear about how you used to do it. It didn't work. Let's talk about a way that works, and this outlined in this book. I've got news for you guys. I have not been to a meeting since Wednesday 2 weeks ago. I haven't been to a meeting in 17 days. And I'm fine. Disclaimer, I talk to 10 plus guys in recovery every day. We may have hour and a half long phone conversations about the spiritual way of life and about these practices that are better than any meeting you could possibly ever go to, I can promise you. Because we're connected in a different way. It's not about the meetings, it's about the steps in the spiritual path. Don't mix up what I'm saying. The meetings and the fellowship are incredibly vital and important. But when you reach a place, a recovered place, with a conscious contact with this thing, I go to meetings for completely different reasons now. I go to meetings to try to find sponsees and other people I can help. I'm there to carry a message of depth and weight. I'm there to be of service to the fellowship. That's why I show up. Tarek and I will be no more sober when we leave here this weekend than we were when we got here. But we will have done a service to our mankind. Okay? That's why we're here.
Go. Page 34. So, the types, I love when Brandon does that. He's the first person I ever ran across that does this exercise when he gets a newcomer. And I think it's important. Because I think sometimes those individuals that he described, that there's an assumption there that everyone's the same. Maybe it's an unconscious assumption that everyone that walks through the door suffers from alcoholism and addiction the same way. I don't know. I don't believe that to be true. I think there's a spectrum. And those types run along the spectrum. And so there's a place in our big book that even refers to the spectrum, believe it or not. It's on page 34. For those who are unable to drink moderately or use drugs recreationally, the question is how to stop altogether. We're assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop for good and all, forever, not one day at a time. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which is a, there's varying degrees. Extent to which he or she has already lost the power to choose whether he or she will drink or not, or use or not. The closer you are to a type 4, based on your experience, the harder you have to practice the daily disciplines of the spiritual basis of life. I hope that makes sense. Because I surround myself with people that view the steps the same way I do, which leads me to believe that the majority of them, if not all of them, are type 4s. You know, I'm between a type 3 and a type 4 addict. I did lose everything. I lost a home. I filed bankruptcy. I was incarcerated. So that was part of my story. And again, I said it earlier, I am grateful that the mentality followed me in here. And go and dig deep. Are you willing to attack this like you attacked that way of life, the drugs and alcohol? Especially those of us that go multiple times, damn it. 2/3, if not 3/4 of this room has been the treatment more than one time. Are you not tired of being in places? I mean, I love the Bridgesville, but are you not tired of being in places? Of taking roll call? Of having to get up at a certain time and be on fire watch and all the other stuff that places like this require? Are you not sick and tired of this shit? But the way you live life must be acceptable, right? There's that damn word again. It is the most, one of the most fascinating things to watch. I don't know why. I don't know why it happens. I work in this industry, and I run a program, and I'll do the exercise with those of you that just raised your hand. Bunch of hands went up in the treatment more than one time. So I work in this industry, and I'm going to tell you that the industry lives off repeat business. You guys do realize that, right? I went to treatment more than one time. I went to more than one sober living program, and I went to a halfway house. The 12 steps were an afterthought. Every place says, and this is different. There's a degree of emphasis on the steps here in the big book that you don't see at a lot of places.
Who went to treatment before and they actually told you that you needed to spend some time in the book and work the steps?
Okay.
4. How many people are here, Bill?
59.
So 55 of you never heard that.
It's amazing to me, because when I did that question at a big book workshop that I was doing on Monday nights, 2/3 of the room went up. They'd been to treatment more than one time. But the question that I focus on is, hey, has anyone told you that you're going to have to work these steps, clean up the damage you created, and then sacrifice a great deal of personal time showing someone else how to work the steps? Because that's the key to permanent recovery. Not one hand went up. Why don't they tell you that? They don't.
Well-meaning people.
They're not trying to hurt us either. I think it has something to do with very few people actually work the steps that come to the 12-step fellowships. You know that line in the book says, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. You know what it should say? Rarely have we seen a person follow our path, is what that line should say. Why is that? We're never going to really have an answer to that. But I always point this out because I can't quit upon a non-spiritual basis. I got to have a lot of God, or I'm going to have a lot of crack, period. I mean, it's so clear for me to see that.
And if you've got a problem with God, cool. Hopefully you'll make it back, and when you get back, we'll still be talking about God.
Mm-hmm.
And those of you guys that heard us here before, we don't pull punches on that. We are going to talk about some sort of spiritual life. It's the only answer we got. There are other answers. It's the only one we got. Okay? I want to touch on something else real quick. If you turn to page XVI, if you're in the if you're in the fourth edition, we're in the middle of the story about how Dr. Bob and Bill came to connect with each other. Dr. Bob had repeatedly tried spiritual terms or spiritual practices and couldn't get sober. He was missing the allergy part, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But at the bottom of the page, of page XVI, it says this seemed to prove that one alcoholic could affect another as no non-alcoholic could. It also indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, one addict with another, was vital, life-giving, to permanent recovery. It does not say one day at a time. Is anybody observing that? Permanent recovery. Now, this is Brandon's take. If it offends you, again, I'm sorry, but this is Brandon's take on it. If I got a leaking PVC pipe that goes from my well to my filter, and it's got a hairline crack in it, I can take enough duct tape and wrap it around that pipe to get it to stop for one day. Okay? Now, since it's the water line under pressure for my house, the duct tape isn't going to last forever. In order for me to properly fix that pipe, I got to turn the water off, go in, cut the pipe on both sides of the crack. I got to cut a new piece of pipe, dry fit it, get a coupling. Got to use the purple stuff, use the PVC glue, stick it on, hold it in place, wait for a while, turn the water on later. Permanent fix. That will never, if I did that properly, that will never leak again unless I let the pipe freeze again because I forgot to insulate it, right? Like, it will never freeze ever again, never break ever again. Permanent fix. So the amount of effort to get one day of use out of that pipe is completely different than permanent use out of that pipe. Do you understand? The amount of effort for me to stay sober for one day, small. The amount of effort for me to stay sober permanently, implying rest of my life, greater. Here's the cool thing, guys, is once you start doing it, A, it becomes easier. B, you get excited about it. 3, you start to see some real results, which then accelerates it to make it more exciting for you to want to do it more. I feel like I am conveying that I'm excited about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous. Does it sound that way to you guys?
Yeah.
Okay. That's because I've lived this way of life, not one day at a time, but with the intent to go on forever. And it gets exciting. And I get to see people's lives transform, and I get to have fun with life. But if I'm just going to suffer through miserably one day at a time, well, that sounds miserable to me. So if you want, you can join us, and we'll keep showing you how we do this stuff. So take a... Take a break or no? Oh, no, we're going for longer than
no.
I thought. Let's take a
15-minute break.
Oh, I forgot our session.